Oh man, this is a fresh episode of Couch Connection. I am Fabian Vixen. On this fresh episode, we're going to talk about the counselor-administrator relationship, how that can positively and negatively affect your role as a counselor in your buildings. Also, I have Dr. Albert Wiggins on an interview I got on this episode from the Fort Valley State University. He is a principal in Colorado. We're going to chop it up a little bit about his relationship with his counselor, and we're reminiscing on some times at Fort Valley State and talk about families. Of course, my housekeeper idols and my final thoughts. And this is part of the show. I say, let's go.
In the streets like it's common sense. Stack the money heads up like it's second nature. Gotta stay pulled up like it's second nature. Keep a chip in my hair like it's second nature. Big wonder make me sad like second nature.
What are the most important relationships in the building besides the student and teacher and the teacher administrator is the counselor-administrator relationship. Our roles as counselors have changed over the last 15, 20 years with the advent of the ASCA National Model. Right now we are in the fourth edition of the ASCA National Model, where of course, if you're familiar with it, they have made the sections as action verbs or action words, so that way each counselor can easily understand the domain or the area that they need to work on or working on or working toward. For a successful relationship with your administrator, a lot of things need to take place. And some of you may know this already, or if you're new to your building, you're trying to be more confident in your role or trying to learn your role, be more effective or more solid in the areas that you want to grow in. One of the most important things that you need to work on, of course, is communication. And communication goes both ways. When you're talking to your administrator, you gotta make sure you are talking to them. First of all, make sure that you have open communication about your duties and responsibilities or things that's needed in the building. Now, every state or every district is different. Even schools within a district are different versus some schools within a district. For a previous district I worked in, I know councils did 504s, possibly might have did RTIs as well. That'll be MTSS in some places, or SSP. Some councils might have 504s and on the PBIS team. More than likely, you probably be on a leadership team with your co-workers or colleagues or whatnot. But making sure you have an open dialogue as far as your roles in the building, as far as what's needed to ensure and enhance student success and closing the gaps in those areas of academics, social emotional learning, or discipline, attendance, so forth and so on. So making sure that you're on the same page and communicating with your administrator or administrative team is the most important part of that role as a counselor. Next part of your strengthening your relationship with your principal is making sure that you and your principal know what you're doing during the day. Not just knowing your role, but what you are actually working on, what you're doing. Some principals know they have a counselor, but knowing what they actually do besides talking to kids and, you know, doing RTI 504 and just, you know, fat pat buddies or lunch buddies, anything like that, making sure that they know that we're more than just, you know, a catch-all for our building. We're not somebody that can fill in for lunch duty or extra duties that are assigned by administration. That little line on that contract on the first page where it says duties assigned by administration. Making sure that we are vocal and give a great understanding and a great visual to what we do. One of the ways to do that, of course, is tracking your time. Showing data that I've affected this area by this way. Now, if I can do this with this much time that I have now, imagine if I have some of the things relieved from my duty. Story I've told before. I went into my evaluation with my principal. I showed my data for what I did for the year, and I showed that I spent almost 20-30% of my time with testing, milestone testing. And he said, "Why you spend that much time on testing?" Yeah, I mean, I was just the test coordinator last year and this year, and you know, it's the things that they asked me to do. I did it because they asked me to do it. I could be more effective as far as helping kids get ready for testing and make sure that they had the proper tools to be successful and do their best on the test. So that next school year, I did not have testing on my plate. The one problem with that is they pushed it to the next new counselor that came in next year. Now, that's part of your job is advocacy, not just for kids or parents or other stakeholders, but advocating for yourself. Now, this worked 50% of the way, but sometimes things don't always work out to the way they should or seem. So make sure that you're tracking the things that you're doing. This which goes to new counselors. It might seem like a overwhelming task to track all of your time or to make sure that I'm documenting, and it's just too much. Start with little things. Even if you cannot create a great graph, just show what you're doing with the time and just showing and do small calculations. Just show things that you're doing on a week. Start with the week of what you're doing. One thing what I've done for the last few years is set my calendar on my core curriculum. If I know I have duty or 504s, I try to plan those as far out as I can so I will know that this is already in place so nothing will catch me off guard. Of course, you're going to have some responsive services. You're going to have a crisis of three that's going to pop up where you have to handle it. But making sure that your time is planned for yourself, will be a great asset into making sure that your time is tracked. And that way you can show the great things you're doing in your building. Now, if you don't set your time, if you don't make your calendar, somebody will make it for you. So making sure that we are staying with the kids and make sure we have time planned out with the students, that will greatly enhance your role in the building besides doing administrative functions or just catch-alls. One thing I learned from one of my previous counselors is that she made sure she's always with the kids and talking to kids or somewhere around the kids so that way other things won't be assigned to her. Now, sometimes you can plan to do that no matter how much you try to make sure you're observing and watching kids and just talking to them and make sure you're visible in the building. Sometimes that doesn't work out. You're going to get assigned some stuff that you can't help. And that's nature of the beast in education. Especially now in a post-COVID world where it's sometimes a shortage. That's right now is a shortage of educators across the globe. Not just in Georgia or Texas, Florida, everywhere. It's a struggle to find educators right now because it's a hard profession to go into for anybody. The pay is not great for some folks who feel they deserve more, which is understandable, and I agree. And it's just, you just don't want to deal with the headaches or the politics or the rigmarole or some of the stuff that's in education. But the main thing when you get into education, special counseling, make sure it's not because of the adults, not because of the stakeholders, not because of the degree you got, it's because you're doing it for the kids. You want to see them successful. That's one of the things you got to make sure when you go into this field. This is not for you. This is a selfless field. This role as a counselor, or even as a teacher, administrator, or anybody, even district personnel, this is hard work. This is not hard work. Of course, whatever job you have is going to be hard work. It's going to be hard work because you're giving your heart and your all to everything that these kids are doing to make sure that they're successful and that they trust you in them being successful and for those callers to become their best version of themselves. I'll be right back with my third and fourth tip right after this. All right, my part three and part four of our counselor administrator relationship. My third topic will be knowing each other's roles. So yeah, we want our principals to know our role and things that we do and the things we're able to help with the building as far as closing the gap and social emotional learning and career readiness. We need to also know what our role of a principal is. Sometimes we don't realize that our principals are inundated with emails, phone calls, stoppaging that work day to deal with something with the teacher or something with a parent, possibly dealing with a field trip. We're not seeing the things that principals are dealing with. Some principals are in at 6 o'clock in the morning, leaving at 6 o'clock at night, 6:30 at night, then going home to do work after they left school. And make sure it goes back to point one, communication and understanding that what they're doing as far as their role as a leader in the building. I'm not saying just like, man, he the principal. He knows my job. Well, to be fair, you're right. But sometimes we got to look at what those administrators are dealing with, and APs and principals. The only difference is somebody is ultimately responsible for the success of the whole building. APs are extension of the principal. If you have an academic coach or an IPL, that's basically a Henry County's term for a academic coach or teacher leader. We need to make sure that we know everybody's role and we're helping them be successful. And just take the shoes of a principal one day. Sometimes we need to actually sit down and actually go through the role of what they're doing as far as checking emails, responding to emails, make sure the announcements are properly read at a certain time, make sure the bell schedule is going off with a hitch, make sure the bus is on time, what bus is late, why this bus late, why this bus needs an administrator, why this class is so rowdy at this time every day, go on the floor, make sure we're visible, make sure my teacher's all right, checking on my new teachers. Make sure my teacher just came out from maternity leave is okay. Do they need anything? That plays a great role in leadership as far as what principals are dealing with. So we need to understand it's not just more than just sitting in the office all day or they never got time to talk to us. We need to see why they don't have time and get it on that calendar just to discuss, you know, this is our plan. We'll do an administrative conference with you and so forth and so on. What are your expectations for this year? What do you need me to do for this year? Sometimes we got to pivot a whole lot and I guess you could say a power word from a couple years ago, learning how to pivot when things change or the information changes. So understanding their role as a leader in the building, just not understanding our role, we have to understand theirs as well. That way the relationship will be a stronger relationship for a counselor and administrator. When I say administrator, I don't just mean the principals or the assistant principals. District personnel as well, as far as a district PBIS coach or deputy superintendent, a council coordinator, a director of guidance and counselor, a director of student support services, a director of special ed, chief of staff, director of finance. Anybody that listen to anybody in the district and want to know what our council is doing in the district. Now you might have one person that's over all of that, or you might be a lucky person to be on some form of district leadership possibly, where you can use that platform as an advocacy tool for not just your building, but all your colleagues in your district. So making sure that your district personnel and your in-building personnel, like principal, assistant principal, teachers, students, parents, community stakeholders, community leaders, understand that role. It'll help the role of counselors be better and also get you buy-in with your principal once they see the many things that you do in the community as well as in your building. There probably are some other things that I'm probably leaving off, but these are the four major ones that I'm thinking about right now for what counselors are doing. And for any new counselors out there, this is month four, you're doing good. hang in there. It's gonna take some time. You can learn your role, learn your craft. Hopefully you have a great mentor walking you through everything that you need to make sure it's done to be great in your role. Now I'll be right back with my interview with Dr. Albert Wiggins right after this. And welcome back to the Counsel Connection. I'm your host, Damian Vixen. This is a treat for me and for anybody that went to the Fort Valley State University. I have my guy, Dr. Albert Wiggins. He is also a member of the Blue Machine March Band, played tuba. Same time I was drum major. For those that do not know my story, I was a drum major at Fort Valley in 2001. Albert was section leader for a while. And Albert, it's great to have you on, man. How have you been?
I've been doing well. Glad to be able to connect with you after all this time. And I know that you're doing great things with this podcast and just doing great things in general. So just happy to connect with you.
Well, let's get this thing started, man. So tell me your why into education. And after your why in education, why in the world would you get in administration?
So my why in the education, funny story, I blame my wife.
Don't do that.
No. I always start off this way. I blame my wife. And she knows what it is. So while I was at Fort Valley, I was originally pre-med. And everybody who knows me always said I was trying to graduate my first semester because I had like 30 credit hours plus band plus all this stuff. But what ended up happening was I ended up going to Korea and I was working overseas. And that is where I met my wife. Now, we weren't dating all back then or anything else like that. But one of the things that she said to me was, she goes, "Why you want to be somebody's doctor? You too good with kids. You need to be somebody's teacher." And literally that stuck with me over the past couple of years. And so I ended up going, and I would say that was in 99. And so then I went back to Korea and she's like, "You still trying to be somebody's doctor?" And after that, I ended up coming back to Fort Valley, and I kind of came to a realization about doctors. And I always said I was going to be a doctor, but it was, doctors have a practice, they practice medicine. So it's not it's like, hey, here, you're going to take this, we're going to try it, see if this work or it worked. Good, we're going to keep you on it. Oh, you try this, it didn't work. All right, we're going to try you on something else. So it was a practice. But while I was working in Korea and I was working with the youth, I saw a change day by day. I saw you can't tell me what to do, you're not my daddy, to when it was time for me to come back to stateside, please don't go, we need you here. And I saw that growth and I saw that it was never the same day twice. And so coming from a family of educators, I was bucking the system anyway. I was like, nah, my cousins and my aunts and all of them are teachers. I don't want to do this. But it became my calling because I like to see the growth day by day. So that is sort of the why that I went into education. And then there was this thing that that we start talking about educational philosophy. And I go back to a shirt that I got when I was in eighth grade that just said education was the key. And I've taken that into my personal philosophy, where now I say that there are many locked doors of opportunity, but in order to walk through those doors, you need a key, and that key is education. So that's kind of my why of how I got into education. And your other question about me, why did I go in administration, was I saw the impact that I was having on students in my small circle, if you will. But I knew that there could be a greater impact for what we could do. And so in working with staff and starting off with my team and becoming team leader, it was like, okay, why not have an impact on those that are going to have an impact on the students that we work with? So that started my journey into the administration, or the dark side, as they say. But it became the piece of, hey, why not be able to work with, be able to build relationships with the students, but also be able to work with our staff that are working with those students as well.
So right now, how long have you been in administration or dark side? How long have you been on that dark side?
Man, you got me trying to math over here. I am going to say I've been in some form of administration for about 15 years.
Oh, wow. That doubled my career as a counselor. Wow. Okay. I haven't been a counselor that long. So 7 years. So, you know, a bit spiritual. I'm still with it. I know you've probably seen almost everything that is possible to see as an administrator. And you work with almost everything you possibly could see with staff members. From your experience, what is the most critical thing we're looking at for far as counselors or mental health wellness facilitators, social workers, that nature? What is the most critical feature that your counseling department must have to mesh with you and your administrative staff?
I would say the ability to build relationships and communicate, and understand the, and in understanding the why. And the reason that I say that is because oftentimes we come into this educational place where the old mantra was, all right, when you walk through these doors, you have to leave who you are and what you have going on at the door to come in to this building, and oftentimes connect with the curriculum that you may not have any connection to. But then when you walk back out, you got to pick up everything for the students and then go back to what it was. And so what do you do? You have an 8-hour break with a bunch of stuff on your mind. And so now for anyone that I work with, it is about building that relationship and understanding the cultural capital. What are our students bringing to the table? What goes on not only inside of school, but outside of school, and being able to help navigate, build those relationships, as well as communicate with me as the administrator, or communicate what needs to be known to our staff members so we can help facilitate our students' success. Because we have students who come in and this might be the only reprieve that they have, but when they walk out, they walk back into a situation that you would not believe that they have to deal with at 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 years old. And so if we can build that relationship, give them that safe space, we're able to have that bond, have that communication. So then when dealing with the student or dealing with the situation, we can be on the same page of how we need to proceed, or being able to come up with a plan of success. And then that really shows that it's not a surface level of caring. There's a deeper level of caring and knowing who our students are by name, knowing what's going on, being able to support them as well.
That's very indicative and deep and correct. Now, so no need to even ask any follow-up question on that part. But as far as your experience working with counselors, what can you say is the most important thing that counselors bring besides the communication part and knowing your students? What is your role as an administrator to advocate for your counselors to make sure the comprehensive program is in place?
I think it's the insight that a counselor brings to a unique their unique perspectives, if you will. So going through my educational journey, I was not on the counseling side. I was on the education side, the curriculum and instruction side, the educational sociology and educational administration. Those are where my strengths lie. And in understanding the the other side where it comes to the inside of the counselor. When we have conversations, or when my counselors and I have conversations, I often get a different perspective of, hey, what about this? Or let's try this. And sometimes those things work. Sometimes we're able to have what we call, or what I call, constructive discourse, in trying to be like, okay, well, here's the end goal of what I have to do kind of as an administrator, but how do we get there? And being able to have those discussions. And sometimes the insight that I get from my counselors help me really look at the situation from another perspective. Or being in the position that I am in now, one of my current counselors has been here for a while, and so she's my right hand. And so literally, if I have an idea of what I want to do, I'm like, hey, let's talk about this. Is this going to work? Poke holes in it. Give me your insight. So that way, when we want to move forward with it, you've not necessarily shot it up in a negative way, but you basically, all right, you got to think about this. You have to do this. You have to do that. And so we have those type of discussions. So then when we're moving forward, we are able to keep the main thing. And so then my counseling staff also comes to me and just say, hey, we're struggling with this and trying to figure out how we can support this student, or we see a high number of students not passing this class. What's going on? Is it something with the subject matter? Is it something with the teacher? Is it something that's going on? And so that causes me to be like, all right, I need to have a conversation and start doing a deeper dive. And so, case in point, for example, I had my counselor come to me and we were talking about students not passing their capstone embedded personal financial literacy. And the first thing that I did, I listened to the concerns, and then I went and talked with the teacher and I just said, hey, what's going on? What's going on with these students? And just trying to figure out, not necessarily pointing fingers, is it a teacher thing? Is it a student thing? But just really trying to understand. And that I would say I wouldn't have gotten to that point of even starting to look at that other than the data that I have, without the insight of my counselor saying, hey, I'm seeing a number of students come through. And so it's not just this term, but as long as I've been here, I'm seeing this happen. And so right now we're working on a plan to make sure our students are able to meet the course embedded capstone, and taking a look at what are we instructing on, how are we instructing it, how are we assessing it, but then also looking at student motivation. And to complete those tasks. And so that comes with us just being a team and being able to have that communication and me receiving the insight from my counseling staff on that.
So basically what you're saying is you're making sure that collaboration is a two-way door for you and the counselor. It's not more so as a administrator telling the counselor, hey, this is what I want done. You actually collaborate with that department to achieve and close student gaps, correct?
That's the only way that we're going to get anywhere. I can have my, if you will, my overall outcome, but being in education I've been at this for 23 years right now, and you can't do it by yourself. There is no way to do it by yourself. So you have to have that collaboration. You have to be able to be able to say, okay, what are we going to do for our students? Not what are we going to do to our students, but what are we going to do for our students? And how do we do that? So no, you can't do it by yourself. So yes, we have to have that collaboration. It has to be that two-way door. Yes, there might be the overall goal we're going to meet, but it's not that we can't meet it. It's not you're going to rank and file and boom, 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 boom to meet it. It's how are we going to meet it? And then whenever we hit a roadblock, how are we going to overcome this obstacle? Because we still have to get to the ending point, if you will.
What's been the most challenging thing as administrator?
The most challenging thing as an administrator? Wow. is, I would say for me, it's more, what more could I have done? It's kind of that question, because I run into situations where, hindsight being 2020, you see where some of your students end up, or you see how certain situations turn out, and you go back and you be like, what more could I have done? If I would have said this differently, or if I would have done this just a little bit differently. I oftentimes, not saying that I do this to have done this to dwell in a negative space, but you know how we're in this world, we're in this realm of social media and stuff like that, and being in education, you know, where are they now kind of stuff. And so sometimes, like, you sit back and wonder, where are some of your students now? And like, you might see some of their, like on social media, you connected with certain teachers, and certain teachers have connections to former students and stuff like that. So you wonder, where are they now? And I look back and I see students who are successful. I see students who have families, but I also see students who they struggled while they were in school and they seem to be struggling now. I've seen students who have struggled while they're in school and unfortunately they are no longer with us. And I get to the point, what more could I have done?
Yeah.
Like, could I have had another conversation? Could I have done something else? And you can't necessarily live in the past, but that is a motivating factor for dealing with the present and the students that I deal with now, in making sure, okay, I want to make sure I can do everything that I can, because I don't necessarily want to find myself in the what more could I have done. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges for me.
Yeah, that was a deep one. I didn't mean to make you that deep on that one. So I'm gonna end this on a light note. You still play the tuba, man? You still play any brass instrument as a relaxing point? You still play?
So here we go. So the answer to your question in short is yes. Now I have, as far as my brass instruments go, I own a trombone.
Okay.
I own a trumpet, so I'll play those at home. But I keep my tuba mouthpiece at school for the most part, because what I will do is I will be like, all right, you know what? I need to take a break from the office, and I will go down and I'll grab a horn and I'll sit with the band and I'll play and stuff like that. For the past couple of years, I've like worked with our band director, and I would like get the music for like the concert.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden at the concert, sometimes the students don't know that I play. Sometimes they do, but all of a sudden I'm playing with them at the concert, and they'd be like, what? And I'd be like, oh, so that's some things that you don't know. So I still play. Right now I support my kids and what they do. I got my oldest graduated high school. He is going to college. My second oldest is in the band, or is in his band, but as much as I try to get him on brass, he's a percussionist. And but when I say he's a percussionist, he's a true percussionist. Like,
he can play down the line everything.
Yeah, he plays down the line everything: xylophone, marimba, drums, like everything. When it comes down to his band class, like, they have three different classes. They have the concert band, they have the symphonic band, then they have the wind symphony. He's in the wind symphony, and like, I go to his concerts and I'm just like, wow, I wish you were playing brass. But just to watch him switch from three or four instruments within a concert set like it's nothing. He's there. My third oldest is in eighth grade, and then my baby girl is in first grade. So,
wow. You got the whole generation gap right there.
Look, I got it all. And I tell you, baby girl was a surprise because.
Oh, that's my my youngest is ninth grade. Me and my wife, she thought she had the flu. And I was like, you ain't sick, you baking. I'm like, baking what? A baby? I'm like, we look at each other like this.
Yeah.
But yes, they play saxophone. My 11th grader plays saxophone. Both in the marching band. One of them wants to try for drum major, but I'm not going to put out there who. But it ain't the 11th grader, so. you know, I got two older kids, step kids, but they my older kids anyway. They both, of course, you know where they at, so, you know. No, they ain't going nowhere else, but. Yeah. But I'm glad you still play. I still play, so that's the best thing to do is to find a way to engage with kids. And I started at last year, right here. I played for the kids at lunch, and they were like, whoa, Mr. Vic played it. I ain't know he could play. And some of the kids today, like, last year, this year, seventh graders, they say like, "Hey, you gonna play? You gonna play again this Friday?" I'm like, we'll see. We might play next week because we're doing a Red Ribbon Week or whatever. So I might put on a Run DMC outfit, pull my horn out, play some 80s, 90s stuff on whatever. So
I've been seeing some of the videos and I've been like, yeah, he's still at it. And then and then your Christmas concerts. So yeah,
I'm all right. I might have gotten a little bit better over the last 18, 19 years, a little bit.
Just a little bit. Yeah, I was at one of my son's performances because they did a fall concert, and one of his friends had switched from the tenor sax just started playing soprano in the middle of the song. Like, he had went from tenor, started playing soprano because he had a solo in the song, and then went back to tenor. And I was like, man, if that ain't fate right there. I was like, man, if that ain't fate, I don't know what. So I thought about you when I saw that. I was like, yeah, we was in jazz band and everything else. I was like, okay.
Oh, yeah, that's... Yeah, Fort Valley had a band, a jam band in Georgia. So, I mean,
yeah.
And then one solo, I might be playing alto on Afterburner. Next thing you know, you see a soprano come out on Watermelon Man. I'm like,
yep.
But whatever we need to do, get back together. We need to get jobs, directors, or something. But Albert, it has been a pleasure to have you on. I am glad we did hook up, man. I'm just glad we hooked up, man. It's been a while since we chopped it up, man. I appreciate the time, man.
Yeah, look, I appreciate it. Thank you for all that you do and doing this. And just know that you got some great things coming. And doing this, it only works if we work together. So yeah. I appreciate it.
Thank you, man. We'll be right back with some more talk. We'll be right back with some more Council Connection right after this.
This is the part of the show where I talk about my housekeeper items. Of course, you can find me on the Twitter at Fade the PSC. You can find me on Facebook at The Council Connection with Fabian Vix. Find me on Weebly, fadethecounselor.weebly.com. You can listen to my podcast on a number of platforms: Anchor, Spotify, Breaker, Overcast Podcast, Amazon Podcast, Google Podcast, Radio Public, and of course, our podcast. You can find old episodes from the show. We're in season 4 right now. This is the 8th episode of this season. You can find all 4 seasons up to date on those platforms. You can also just Google Council Connection Fabian Vix, or just Google Fabian Vix podcast, and you'll see that I'm going to see my podcast find it that way as well. As I'm recording this on Thursday, next week I'll be going to the Georgia School Council Association Conference. I hope to see a lot of my Georgia councils there. Hook back up, and it's going to be great. As I say, when I go to conferences, it's going to be great to see everybody. I haven't seen them in a while, and hopefully they'll reciprocate that. Hopefully I get some interviews while I'm there talk about some counseling stuff, just chop it up and just see how everybody's doing as far as being a second year away from the being full on virtual or half and half, hybrid and hybrid, which, you know, virtual and in person. We'll see how that's going, how they're doing in buildings, what things have changed since the last 2 years as a counselor, and we'll go from there. Hopefully it'll be successful. Hopefully we'll all learn a lot from the conference and take away some things from there and bring it back to our buildings. In a couple weeks, we'll be recording an episode with Caroline Perry and Steve Sharp. We are doing our Nerd Out version of our podcast, talking about comic book movies and shows. We know we're going to talk about Moon Knight. We definitely going to be talking about Black Panther: Wakanda Forever, and we'll find out some other stuff to talk about. We're finalizing our rundown for what we're going to be talking about. So it's going to be a great episode. We're going to have a lot of fun discussing everything with them, as far as that, and see how they've been doing since this pandemic started. I know I just saw Steve at ASCA this summer, so hopefully everybody's doing well. One note of reference: Steve is not part of board of directors on ASCA. Congratulations to him. I'm proud of him. He's been doing some big things. So we will see them in a couple weeks. Of course, you know, we're going to take a little hiatus after first week of December, second week of December. We're working on getting the number one podcast in America, Council Accents. Hopefully they'll be able to join me. I'm working on some dates with them. I'm going to work on that and see what we can do to make that happen. And we'll be right back with my final thoughts. Faye's final thought. This is going to be a tough one today, because this is basically speaking to me something I don't even think about much, because, you know, I just work and I need to figure things out. And I'm always perfect. Whatever I say to a lot of people I talk to, I'm not perfect. I'm not the best at anything. There's always somebody better than you. That's the one thing I know. There's always going to be somebody better than you. But knowing your own worth is a key to believing how worthy you are for your well-being and your happiness. I'm going from psychology today. Knowing yourself, when your self-worth depends on outside situations, it is unstable. And when you adopt pro-social goals and reduce existential contingencies and you focus on your strengths, you'll know your self-worth better. Sometimes when we let our emotions, our feelings make us feel like we're not worthy, our self-esteem drops. We get easily frustrated. Emotionally we'll be down. Sometimes we just get burnt out. That's how you possibly get burnt out easier. But knowing your worth, you have to prioritize your learning. I'm an ongoing learner. I try to learn as much as I can. I go to conferences. I try to make sure that I'm ready to help lead our scholars to being the best version of themselves. Another thing I try to do is adopt pro-social goals. Try to make sure there's something good, goals that are good for us and others. When we set goals for ourselves and other people, like our needs assessments, going into our SMART goals for the year. Not only would that help scholars close the gap, it'll also build us as more competent counselors. It'll give us the opportunity to improve not only the scholars, but our work, ourselves, our emotional stability. Another thing, when I'm looking at this article now, don't let the outside influences bother you. So when we look at basing our worth on what other people think our worth is, or what they tell us our job duties are, it decreases our social emotional health, our social emotional wealth. not being happy at a job or being unhappy with your role based on what other people think your job is or what they feel that you need to do in the building or whatnot, that's not a primary focus of your role as a counselor. It could wear and tear on you. But making sure that we focus on the why of our job, the who, and within the why. The why is the who. My students. Making sure I'm exposing my students to various opportunities that they have, giving them all the information they could be to be successful, showing them that there are other ways to handle situations, other ways to build their knowledge base and putting tools in their toolbox to be more successful. So when we start focusing on stupid stuff, like, there's a lot of stupid stuff I think about because I worry about, am I really this good as a counselor? What do other people think? Or am I good as a counselor? And I'm like, yeah, I'm a good counselor. I think I'm real good. I think I go toe for toe anybody, and I worry about that too much. Trying to be their favorite counselor when I need to be my favorite counselor. Say that again. Trying to be their favorite counselor and not my favorite counselor. I have to love myself as a counselor before anybody else can like me. And it's difficult because you try to get approval from your peers and colleagues and administrators and district personnel to see the work that you're doing. Just do the work, which is what I've been trying to do for years. Just do the work and everything will blossom for you. It takes time. Especially if you're in the area where it just seems like it's just status quo, or okay, you're doing the work, okay. But when you're doing different work from everybody, when you work hard, you do everything, it get difficult, especially within your own building, if that's the case. And it just feel like that nobody sees what you're doing or what your actual worth is. Another thing what I look at also, this thing speaks to me. Focus on your strengths. What makes you special? What makes you having those positive qualities, and what that you do that nobody else can. I know I can do a lot of different stuff. I can come from a private sector to a public sector, from retail management, interviewing, knowing what it takes for a job to hire you. I was in a band. I was an HBCU. I was a drum major in high school and college. Played saxophone. Still play saxophone. Positive qualities, I'm nice, I'm kind, I'm straightforward, I'm relatable, I can collaborate. Those are just some of the things that I know I'm good at. That makes all about self-worth hard to talk about, because I don't like talking about myself. If you know me personally, I don't like to talk. I'm an introvert to the 15th power. I am shy until you get to know me. Then it takes time for me to get to know you, and I open up. I keep answers short because I don't want to give a drawn out answer unless it's pulled out of me. I just don't believe in delaying answers or just trying to string an answer along or try to find the words. That's just my personality. And some people see that as a good thing. Of course, some people see it as a bad thing. Depending on where you're, sometimes it's hard for me to market myself and know my worth in my field of counsel, in my field of music. But I'm more so know my worth in music versus what I know my worth is in counseling. Because I know what I can do. I know what I bring as a musician. I'm professional. I'm on time. I'm prompt. I learn the music. I play the music. It sounds good enough for folks to recommend me. I'm not being arrogant when I say it. I'm just no. Counseling is different. Because nobody's going to pat you on your back and say, great job, or recommend you, or anything like that. Seems like it's cliquish sometimes with other people. It seems like it's cliquish with different segments, different areas. It might be a clique within a clique. Or it might just be people just don't feel comfortable who you are because they're scared of what you can do. Now, you can't use that as a positive feedback as far as yourself and building your self-worth, but you don't want to do that because then it's going to possibly breed on arrogance or uncomfortability working with you. So those four tips that I've read from psychology today spoke to me because these are things I work on every day. I still got to learn my strengths. I'm good at a lot of stuff. I just don't say nothing. I just work at it. I make sure I learn. I try not. The one thing I definitely need to work on is not worrying about my outside influences. Pro-social goals as far as learning how to make scholars better, make myself a better counselor, and prioritize my learning. Those two go hand in hand, making sure that I'm learning more to provide more for my students and my colleagues and my peers, because I do a podcast and you listen to this to get tips and try to be a better version of yourself for your students as well. Just know your worth. You know what you do. You know what you're good at. Accentuate that and keep learning. I want to thank you for listening to my podcast. I want to thank Dr. Wiggins for jumping on with me and talking about his job as a counselor, as a principal, and working with his counselors. That's the end of my show, and I'm out.